Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's another edition of the Terry's Talking Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. I'm David Campbell, host, and I am joined, as always, every week by Terry Pluto, award-winning columnist from The Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Terry, it is Thanksgiving week. What do you like to eat on Thanksgiving?
Well, for the last, I don't know how many years, it actually is turkey from the Haven of Rest, Akron City Mission, because we spend the evening there. My wife, Roberta, and Gloria Williams is like a sister to us. And we do the service there, talk to the guys. They serve up the food. We eat it. So that is our Thanksgiving most of the time. And sometimes I go to church somewhere in the morning or else visit my mom, Melva, in the nursing home. So it's really, I view it as a day. When they say Thanksgiving, it's great if you have a big family. And boy, if you're hosting one of those dinners, you know about having to give it up for the good of the team. But in this case, we don't have those type of families. Ours are smaller. So Thanksgiving is a way to give thanks to be with others. And that stuff just lifts me up.
I love that you do that, Terry. And there's so many people who are doing that kind of stuff this week where it's about connecting with people and giving thanks for what we have and just getting out in the community. I always really admire that you do that. It's a great thing. So,
but the flip side is if you have a family that's around in that, like I have one brother, he lives in Sarasota. Roberta has one sister. She lives in Fredonia, right over the border. By the way, she only has 3.5 feet of snow. They got off easy. But the point is, we don't get together with them. You know, our parents have passed away and that. So now the flip side is if you have a bunch of people, a bunch of family, get together with them, enjoy them, because I can speak from experience, they die off on you.
Yeah, and as we've talked about, stay away from politics.
Yes, it's dumb to talk about that. Yeah. If you want to just complain about the Browns or something, you know.
Yeah, time is so short with
bring
family.
Bring up Donovan Mitchell. That should make somebody happy.
You shouldn't spend it arguing about the midterm elections.
Oh,
all right.
Lord.
Donovan Mitchell, much more pleasant topic of conversation. So let's start with the Cavs today. Terry, what do you think?
Well, I was looking at, you know, they had that 5-game losing streak. And part of it was Garland coming back and not being 100% from the eye injury. But I also think a fair amount of that was Garland and Mitchell having to figure out how to play together. Because remember, Garland got hurt in the first game. Then they had a 6-game winning streak. So it really, with Mitchell, they really hadn't acclimated to that. And also, for whatever reason, they just got lazy during that 5-game losing streak. They had the worst defensive basically, they ranked 30th out of 30 teams' defensive efficiency during that 5-game losing streak. Now, they've won 3 in a row. They're back to number 1 during that time defensively. So I wrote down, all right, now Garland and Mitchell playing together. The last 3 games, all wins. Garland is averaging 31 points. Mitchell is averaging 25. Now, that could be good or bad. It's good if you're shooting a good percentage and doing that. It's bad if you're taking way too many shots. Garland, for the 31 points, shooting 52%. Mitchell, for the 25 points, shooting 49%. So they are playing together well. You can see there are times when, how about this? Garland, 22 assists in those 3 games. Mitchell, 20. And JB's doing a good job of making sure that you could take one out and put the other one in, that kind of stuff. But the big deal, and this is something we talked about on our podcast for a while, was get LeVert out of that lineup. And, you know, I voted for Omar Stevens, but it could have been Dean Wade. It could have been Okoro. Any of those three. Put them in there. They need a guy that doesn't need to see the ball and will defend.
And I really liked what Chris Fedor, our colleague who covers the Cavaliers, he had a great anecdote in his story today, mm-hmm. his follow-up about, I mean, Lamar Stevens, you know you're going to get some length from him and you're going to get some defense, right? But I loved this story. He went, this is the quote from Donovan Mitchell last night about Lamar Stevens. He came to the huddle and he said I was getting my ass busted. they hit two shots on me. And he was like, what are you going to do? Are you going to guard or are you going to let them bust your ass? I don't think anybody scored on me after that. You need a guy like that. I respect and appreciate that. It wasn't just about me. He's told others too. When you have a guy that's vocal about that and not afraid to speak up to everybody on the team the same way, it kind of lifts you up and gets your energy up. So here's Lamar Stevens, a guy who has fought and clawed his way to get to where he is in the NBA. He's playing in a game against a team that, you know, that the Cavs lost to last year in the play-in tournament in the Hawks. It's a big game. They had it circled on their calendar. And Lamar Stevens comes in and tells the team's new superstar to start playing defense and stop being so soft. I thought that was just such a cool story about a guy like Lamar Stevens who's having an impact not just stat-wise, but they talk about LeBron and other players making guys around them better. Here's Lamar Stevens making guys better around him who have a bigger reputation, make more than him, and have a bigger presence in the league. And he really made an impact last night.
When I've heard the thing team culture so many times, my eyes have ceased rolling back into my head. They don't even open up anymore. My ears shut down. But this is an example of team culture, and it began with J.B. Bickerstaff and the assistant on playing defense. So really all Stevens was doing was parroting his coach in a different way, man-to-man, teammate-to-teammate. Secondly, the players know Stevens, what it took for him to get here. They realize that this is the guy's the second leading scorer, I think, in Penn State history, and he's given up his offense totally just to fit in and make it work. And they saw how JB was trying all these other people in front of him, and he worked hard in practice. He waited. He kept his mouth shut. Those guys are like that. I mean, Terry Francona will tell you, Austin Hedges is like that. You may say, gee, what is that about? He's batting, you know, 102 and this. But I go, no, it's deeper than that. And, you know, and Hedges could go out there. I mean, a couple of times I've seen him, like, almost go Tony Pena. How Tony Pena used to go with Jose Mesa, like, kind of take his finger and hit him in the chest. I've seen it wasn't quite like that, but it's like Hedges got very close to Karinchak a couple of times early in the year to try to get him together out there. And he would say, get behind the plate, get hit in 125, but they don't do that because they know who the guy is and they know what he means to the team. And they know that the culture set by the / manager or coach is what this is all about. So I love that story today. There's a lot of other things. You know, Chris Fedor has grown so much as a basketball writer over the years. And I will tell you, David, I'm hard on judging basketball writers, partly because I did it. Of all the jobs I've ever had that done well, yeah, I did baseball too, but I felt I was the best at the NBA. And like Brian Windhorst was my protege till now. I turned to Brian at times. Well, Chris has now moved from the same thing too, where I would talk to him about writing and this and that. And now I'm calling him and say, Chris, what do you see? What do you think? And stories like that and others, you could just tell he has a lot of connections with the team and he gets what they're doing. And he understood too what JB has brought in, which is very, very different. Jim Jones and I were talking a little while ago because I was doing a Cavs show, and he said JB is as good a communicator as a coach as he's ever been around.
Well, and I was going to ask you, Terry, he kind of coaches use different ways to get the message through to players, and we talked last week a lot of it is taking minutes away or not running plays for you. I thought it was interesting how JB, his quote that he used was, we've gone from being junkyard dogs to fat cats.
Yeah,
which I thought was a great image. And it was a way to call the team out in public without hanging it on one guy or two guys. And it really, you know how athletes are. They don't like to be called soft.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a great story up right now on cleveland.com that Nathan Baird and Stephen Means combined on about what it's been like to be the parent of an Ohio State football player for the last 360 some days after Michigan beat them up there and called them soft.
I got to read that.
And I thought JB kind of tapped into that a little bit. And it's like, you know, you guys are fat cats, and I don't know how much of an impact it had, but things like the fat cats thing and things like Lamar Stevens, you're right, Terry, it's culture. What did you think of the job JB has done here? Did he wait too long to make this move, or do you think he was right to kind of let it play out during the losing streak to see if it would self-correct? How do you think he handled that?
Because LeVert has been a 20-point scorer, and LeVert tried very hard to do that role. He probably did go too long, but sometimes how Francona would go too long with a veteran too. Remember that. It's out of respect for that. So that when the move is finally made, you're playing a long game, you know, a season with months and months, that everybody knows, oh, that makes sense, including the player who's been, you know, moved out or his role has changed. So I think that's what he was doing. And also, by the way, the other day against Atlanta, I'm watching JV. There was a period where he thought the defense was sagging against the Hawks. So what he did, he not only had Stevens out there, he put Isaac Okoro out there. And he had Isaac Okoro, Stevens, a couple big guys, and a guard. I think it was Mitchell. And it was like, go after them, dogs. I mean, that's really what it was. And then, of course, when you work hard on defense, you get some easy baskets on offense that tends to follow. But I love that spirit of this, even though that was a game where Osman was scoring a lot. You know, you have good Chetty and bad Chetty. There's nothing in between with him. There's never average Osman. He's either going to be really good or he's bad, and get him out of there quick. If the first three shots at the side of the backboard and bounce off his head, you know that. And other times he's shooting from upside down and he makes them. You just have to see where he's at. But that was a sign too. See, that when we talked about minutes, that sends a message like, no, we're going to get tougher. And here's the other thing to keep in mind when you make the change in the lineup. You have to give your big guys the ball if you want them to keep defending and rebounding. You have to do that. And when one guy just gives up shots, it allows the ball more often to go to Allen and Mobley. I like how Mobley and Allen are kind of working on some high-low passing to help each other out. It's really going to be fun all year to watch how this team keeps evolving and changing. And wait, I know I'm going like a long Hubie Brown didactic thing. Wait till Ricky Rubio comes. When Ricky Rubio comes, remember this, last year, when Rubio and Garland played together, this is hard to believe, but it's true, they had the highest plus minus of any duo in the NBA. And when Rubio comes in, those big guys are going to get a bigger pieces of the pie. And I will say this, Mitchell and Garland will even learn more about how to throw that ball into the post by just playing and being around that guy.
Yeah, that's something to look forward to. I want to ask you, Terry, so Garland, Mitchell, Mobley, Allen, and then the fifth guy right now, Lamar Stevens, the kind of the odd man out is Caris LeVert for the moment. Do you think this could be a good thing for him, even though he's out of the starting lineup and everybody wants to start? But with him coming off the bench, there's not as many guys on the floor who need the ball.
Yep.
Could this be a good thing for him? Or do you think is he the kind of player you could see who kind of would take it personally and be like, all right, well, I guess I'm out of the mix. What do you think?
Well, he better make it a good thing because he's a free agent at the end of the year. Let's just start from that. Secondly, he seems to be a good guy and guess that part of it. But the bench scoring has been all over the place, good and bad this year. There's not been very consistent. And with Kevin Love having this, he's playing with this, stress fracture in his shooting hand of his right thumb. Kevin, to me, looked like he realized I better do more rebounding and stuff like that. He did not look good shooting the ball. So LeVert scoring is going to be, because I think he's more consistent than Osman. Because after that, you don't get much scoring from anybody else off the bench. So that role is wide open. It's much like what Utah has done with Colin Sexton. They're putting him in there. He's playing 22 minutes a game, getting 13 points and shooting like 48%. There's the role. And that's an important role. It's a game-changing role. On top of that, when LeVert will be playing, David, he will be playing generally against backups, which he is physically imposing, especially he was in the backcourt at 6'6". I'm talking about LeVert. I think it could really play to his strength.
And they've got so many options they can go to in terms of combinations, guys coming in off the bench, who's, you know, who's playing what spot. It's going to be really interesting to see how JB kind of negotiates that the next month or two here. So, all right, Terry, so the Cavs have a home game tomorrow night on Wednesday. We're taping this on Tuesday. They're Wednesday at home against Portland. And then there's a three-game Eastern Conference opponent trip, Friday at Milwaukee at 8, Sunday at Detroit at 6, and then Monday at Toronto, and that one's at 7:30. So a back-to-back on the road, but a short flight. So
yeah, they're right. That's a perfect trip, really.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. So, all right, Terry, you have been writing for the last week. Let's move into the Browns here. You wrote right after the game the other day, after the Browns lost to the Bills, that it was time to move on from Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator. I wanted you to kind of, before we get further into it, talk about why you finally decided that move needs to be made and what kind of made you write that after the Bills game.
Well, I've been moving in that direction. You know, I've been writing for probably months. I mean, seriously, when the offense was playing fairly well and the defense was being disgraceful against the run game and so on, it just really bothered me. And then he started looking deeper into the stats, and they looked terrible. And here is the reason. I was looking at that. They're 3-7, and so I'm thinking, okay, whatever outside playoff shot, it would be just stunning if they made it. So what do you do with the last seven games besides watch Deshaun Watson when he comes back with six to go? What do you know about your defense? Right now, all you know is your defense is awful. In fact, generally, emails I'm getting from everybody thinks everybody on defense is bad right now. Of course, when you rank 31st and giving up points, you can feel that way. And when you watch how other teams have run over the Browns, you can feel that way. So the question is this: is it personnel or is it scheme? Now, usually it's part one or the other. By changing the coach, the defensive coordinator, and even if you're bringing in Jason Tarver, who did it before, maybe there's some young guy in the staff, you get a chance to look at them with a fresh scheme and a fresh voice. Much in the same way in the middle of the 2018 season when Freddie Kitchens replaced Todd Haley. And the offense, which was horrible at that point, got to be pretty good. And it answered some questions about some things. Now, the questions could be answered that the new defensive coordinator comes in and they still stink. Well, then that's on the front office. Okay, now we know it's a personnel thing. See, if you don't do it now, you can spend the whole off season, well, we fired Joe Woods and we got this new coordinator coming in and he's going to fix everything, so we don't have to make a lot of big changes in personnel.
So I think, well, there's two parts of this you're getting into, Terry. The first one is the scheme and Joe Woods' coaching of the scheme. Mm-hmm. And we talked last week, Myles Garrett had a comment last week where he basically said, you know, what was the comment? It doesn't help if you want to run through a wall if everybody's running in the wrong direction, I think was his quote.
Yep.
And then after the Bills game, Grant Delpit, maybe it was Monday.
Yeah.
He said, in order to have trust, you have to know what you're doing. You got to have faith in everybody. You have to know what you're doing. And then your team has to have faith. They know what they're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, then it never works. So this isn't Myles Garrett, who, if there's any untouchable players on the Browns, he would be one. This is Grant Delpit, a guy who's maybe starting to come into his own a little bit, has had some good moments this season, also some bad ones. But when you start to see quotes like this, that kind of tells you that scheme is job one in terms of fixing this, right?
Well, that's what the players think. And I remember when David Griffin replaced David Blatt with Ty Lue. And I was, by the way, at that point, the Cavs had the top record in Eastern Conference, I may add. It was like midseason. And so Griffin and I had a pretty good relationship. We were just kind of talking guy to guy. He goes, I was tired of these guys complaining about Blatt and all this stuff. And he didn't play in the NBA. I was tired of the excuses. So I said, all right, I'm putting Ty Lue in there. He played in the league. You guys respect him. Now go to work. And it did work. Now, will this work this time? But that's what I would do. whether whoever it is, you didn't like what was going on with Woods. All right. Excuses are gone. This guy's coming in. We're going to simplify things or whatever it is. And let's see what you do now, because I don't want to hear it. By the way, I thought Stefanski's answer to, Miles Garrett said this. Well, I'm going to talk about Miles. You know, Miles is Miles. I'm going to talk about Miles. No. You say, I don't want my players bringing criticism public. I will talk to Miles and everybody else on the team. It's okay to have criticism, but you bring it in-house.
So do you think – you don't think that was just an indication? I mean, if there's a problem here and the players are saying it in public, they should be fixing the problem. They shouldn't be talking to the players about it. I mean, the players don't say this stuff lightly.
I don't think so.
I don't either, and I think that is just an indication of how it's gotten.
Yes, and maybe it is all excuse-making. The odd thing is, and I delineate this in the story, you know, when you break down the defenses of 3 years with Joe Woods, the decline is incredible. And by the way, so they talk about who they had last year versus this year. All right, last year the two tackles are Malik McDowell and Malik Jackson. Malik Jackson is old and out of the NFL. Malik McDowell's basically on the sidelines of personal problems. Their linebackers that are gone are Mack Wilson, who is now with New England. He started 3 games, primarily a special teams player, and Malcolm Smith, who's out of the NFL. So it's not as if they lost 4 guys who went to other teams and are playing great. And I believe the Browns are like 13th against the run last year. So explain this to me. I can't. By the way, so then you have your two defensive ends are back. You've got all your safeties. The only change in the secondary has been Troy Hill is gone and Martin Emerson is here. And, of course, Emerson, I think, has played pretty well.
He was the Browns' best graded cornerback on Sunday, Terry. But, all right, so what happened is the question. And I think what happened is Anthony Walker Jr. goes down.
Yes.
Your starting middle linebacker. And the other thing that happened, and this is not Joe Woods' fault, is that the progress and the talent of the guys they have signed at defensive tackle, they overestimated how good these guys were going to be. And I keep looking every week at the defensive tackle grades, and it's striking.
How bad
PFF,
they are.
How bad they are. Yeah. Tommy Togiai was the Browns' best-rated defensive tackle against the Bills. He played 11 snaps and had a 53.4 grade, which is not great. The second-best-graded defensive tackle against the Bills on Sunday was Ben Still, who wasn't even on the team 2 weeks ago. They signed him off the Dolphins practice squad, right, last week. And he's your second-best defensive tackle. Coming in below Ben Still at 52.2 are Taven Bryant,
Jordan
your free
Elliott.
Agent signing, and Jordan Elliott. Brian is at 47.0, and Jordan Elliott is at 32.9.
Yeah.
And that is the story. I mean, the defensive backs are having to make so many tackles, and they have shown on plays that they are not interested in tackling some plays, and others they are. But you add all that up, you've got a defense that's soft in the middle, and here's where you're at. It can't stop anybody.
And then if you make the change that I suggest and all that continues, then it's like, all right, Andrew Berry, what did you do here? What are you going to do about it? Because it ain't scheme.
What percentage of it do you think is scheme right now, or do you not know?
I don't really know. You know, I'm guessing half, though, just because I'll go back to there were not so many dramatic changes on defense. Now, have teams changed their way of attacking the Browns? Yes, they have. But that's what I want to find out, David. If you stay status quo, all you know is what you know right now. And it's easy for the front office to make an excuse and blame the coordinator in the offseason. Whereas if you make the change now and you change the coordinator, and by the way, I have nothing personally against Joe Woods, and on top of it, Joe Woods is not coming back. I mean, he knows he's a lame duck. He's been around the NFL a long time. So the fact that he would be fired now versus the end of the season, I mean, to him, it might even be a relief. I'm sure he'd hate losing the job, but that's, he just sees how it's going to play out.
Yeah. It's interesting, Terry. I think Troy Aikman might have said this last week when I was watching a game he was doing, and he said, "I wonder if." So you got all these passing offenses, the Chiefs and the Bills, and everybody's playing two high safeties, and really, and the Browns have done this. They have emphasized guys who can run sideline to sideline and chase people down. And with all these two high safeties, teams are going back now to running the ball, right? You're going to play two high safeties. We're going to
Absolutely.
run. We're going to run right at you vertically. We're not going to run sideline to sideline. We're going to run stuff in the A and B gaps. Stop it if you can, but you look really light and you look really fast, but you can't stop this. And I wonder if the Browns are behind the curve on this right now with the amount of money they have and the amount of experience they have at defensive tackle. Just a
It,
question.
oh, and it's a legit one. That I want that answer, by the way. So let's find out. With something else. Let's find out if somebody can come in here and get some safeties up near the line of scrimmage more. Because remember, that was one of the three safeties thing that they would help against the run, all this stuff. I'm not good enough to know any of this, other than I'm good enough to know what the numbers say right now. The defense stinks. It's 31st and giving up points. It's 24th or whatever against the run and keeps declining. And also, you have players saying weird things like Myles Garrett is saying, I did quite know. It's okay if you know how to run through the wall, but you don't know what direction you're going. And I'm a little tired of Myles with the cryptic stuff, too. I really am. So this is what you just need a guy to go in there and say, this stops. And by the way, Kevin Stefanski is the head coach. He's not just the offensive coordinator. And sometimes he looks like he's just being the offensive coordinator. Whether it's fair or not, that is the perception your fans and your customers have. The Browns have to realize this. And saying it's on me is not enough. Well, if it's on you, do what you can to change it.
Well, I got an answer that's going to solve everything, Terry. They should bring in a new defensive lineman, Lamar Stevens. Just drop him right. He'll
They
take
do
care
need
of
Lamar Stevens. They need Anocoral, both of them up there. And the Junkyard Dog Award, bring that in
That's
there.
right. They'll be giving junkyard dog awards out left and right. So, all right, let's take a break, Terry.
Okay.
We will talk a little bit of Guardians. There's not a bunch going on with the team, but we did want to get into a little bit. Talk about your faith column this week for Thanksgiving, and we got some really interesting Hey Terry questions about whether American League, a national team, National League baseball team should retire two numbers. So I want to get your thoughts on that. We'll be right back on Terry's Talkin'.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back on Terry's Talkin', David Campbell and Terry Pluto. Terry, we didn't get to talk about this last week. The Guardians decided to move on from Nolan Jones. Joe Noga and Paul Hoynes are two reporters who cover the team. They asked about kind of the reasons behind it, and they wrote about this, that there wasn't really a pathway for him here was what they said. But what did you think about that, and did they give up on him too soon?
I talked to Chris Antonetti about this too, right after that. Okay, Nolan Jones was originally a third baseman. In fact, he was being groomed in case they felt they had to trade Jose because they couldn't get him signed. When Jose signed, that blocked that. Then they took him, put him in the outfield, and to his credit, he really did work hard at learning the outfield, and I thought he was okay in right field. They were going to try to work on him at first base, but suddenly they sat down and they said, "We have a whole bunch of young outfielders that are pretty good. It's almost like, who knew? How did this happen? This is Cleveland. There's never enough outfielders. We always have a lot of pitchers, never enough outfielders. So they began, remember, Nolan Jones is a lefty hitter. And they go, well, Stephen Kwan, he looks legit in left field. Gold glove. The way he plays, too, you don't think you see a big decline. He just doesn't look like he's going to be pitched too easily or that. Center field, they will live with Miles Straw. He's their Lamar Stevens. They'll live with him. You know, they want a defensive catcher. We'll talk a little bit about the catching situation, too. But they'll live with Straw. They think he actually hit like 230 or something, I think, after the last 2 months. It was an improvement. So that left right field. Now, there is some concern that perhaps Oscar Gonzalez will begin to get pitched to and some of the holes will show. But we have been hearing this about Gonzalez since he was in Double A. It hasn't happened yet. So they got those three. And then my favorite, and we've been fans of this, have been hearing me, Will Brennan. They finally brought him up. Will Brennan drove in like 107 runs in 125 minor league games and hit like 320. He comes up. What does he do? He is 342 in September. He could play all the positions. He's also a left-handed hitter. So you got left-handed hitters in Kwan and Brennan. Then in the minors, and they're excited about him, not for spring training, but later on, George Valero, another left-handed hitter with power in the outfield. So they felt all those guys we just went through are not only rated ahead of Jones, but quite a bit ahead of Jones. So then they have their 40-man roster crunch, and I'm not going to get into all that. So they just kind of called around. And they actually have their eye on this guy, Juan Brito, who's an infielder that they got Class A from Colorado. And I was talking to one Guardians official, and I said, he was only rated like the 30th prospect in the system for the Rockies. He said, I don't want to sound arrogant. He says, but we have our own ratings, and we have a pretty good track record of trading for other people's prospects. We like him. He's our kind of guy. More walks than strikeouts. We think he has power potential. He could play a couple spots in the infield. He's young. We like him. And so take him, and, Jones, they sent him on his way. So that's what went behind it. But it was the rise of Kwan first, then Oscar, then Will Brennan, with Valera on the horizon, that allowed them to say, we can give up Nolan Jones.
Boy, I was just thinking about it. I think a year ago at this time, we were trying to speculate on who the starting outfield was going to be and where was any production going to come from. And now, like you said, there's just like a wealth of guys and a wealth of options, and they can kind of throw them all out there and see what they do.
In really, spring a big training, David, I wrote a column early on. I talked to Miles Straw, and basically the theme was, well, at least they have one outfielder. I mean, it really was. That was it.
I think that was the headline on the story.
Yeah, I think it was. At least they have one outfielder. Because we know he could catch the ball. And at that point, he'd hit like 270 or 280. And he's like a 255 career big league hitter. I think that was a bit of an aberration last year. But he also has an elite skill. By the way, I'm not going to go all caught up in all those stats, but use the eye test. He catches everything. He throws to all the right bases. Many of you may not have seen Rick Manning play center field. Manning was like that, very similar, defensively, smart, knew where to throw the ball, but Straw has a better arm. So you have him. But as you mentioned now, I mean, Kwan and Straw won gold gloves, and it's not easy to get votes from people in Cleveland when you're young players. That shows you how good they were defensively. I mean, they were eye-popping to other people voting on this. And then in right field, I thought Oscar was decent. Everything they told me about Oscar when they were struggling, it's not been true. They said he did lose a bunch of weight before the season, so he got in better shape because they said he could get fat. They said he was not very good in the outfield, and they said he would just swing at everything. Well, he swings at everything early in the count, but he doesn't later in the count, and he's pretty good out there, and he's got a great arm. So the outfield there, and then you'd work in my guy, Will Brennan. Now, granted, you could have three guys get hurt, and you wish you would have had Nolan Jones, But Nolan Jones also has a lot of holes in his swing. So it's fun to look at that move in the context of what has happened, as you said, in the outfield. I mean, remember, they would start guys like Ben Gamel and all these guys off the street. It just, ugh.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for having a guy in right field who's got a plus arm like he does.
Yeah.
And I think we saw that quite a bit last season where he was able to hold guys just because of the threat of his arm. So that's a change for sure. So, all right. Let's move on, Terry. Your faith column this week. Thanksgiving is—it's a week always when you write a thank you note to the readers, and I thought you might want to talk about that for a minute because it's kind of an annual tradition.
Well, I've written these probably for, I don't know, close to 30 years now, going back to when I was at the Beacon Journal. But never before in a thank you column to readers has the name George Meade appeared. Do you know who he was? He did get a win in a very important contest.
Yeah, I keep thinking he pitched for the Yankees or the Indians in the 50s.
Well,
or so.
He
who
was
is he?
Sort of with the Yankees because I wrote about, I feel like I've been doing this job since the Battle of Gettysburg, 1863. And it, you know, everybody kind of assumes if you follow the Civil War just casually, you don't know your stuff, that the winning general was Ulysses S. Grant at Gettysburg. Because Robert E. Lee certainly took the loss. But no, it was George Meade who had the beloved nickname of the Old Snapping Turtle.
I got to brush up on my Civil War history.
Yes,
Terry.
He was bald and crusty and that. So it's kind of like
just like
Bill
two
Belichick.
Podcast people I know.
Yeah, there you are. You just crusty and didn't like it. So and then to the Old Snapping Turtle. The Turtles' credit, when to carry the Civil War thing just a little longer, when Grant then came from the Western Theater and took over the whole army, he kept Meade as his number two guy, and that worked okay. Probably Grant played more of the good cop, and I think the Snapping Turtle discontinued to snap, but he did get the win, and I mentioned how that was probably my first assignment, or at least it felt like it, and I'm so thankful. Case some of the younger people have never seen it. I've run a picture on the column of a typewriter. Kind of like an Edsel or a Zeppelin, one of these things from the past. I mean, I actually remember, and even a couple times where I would call the paper and I would say, get me rewrite. And I would be dictating my story that I had typed up to somebody on the other end who was typing it. And they would be setting it into print. Now, what is the point of this? That I've been able to last that long, and the readers have been wonderful to me. And it's just astounding through all that technology, all the changes. I still think there's something magic about the newspaper, especially the Sunday paper. I read stuff in that paper I just wouldn't read online. And usually I have four stories in a Sunday paper. We kind of save them for that. And the Sunday paper also is where they put the faith column on the front of the Metro section, the B section. And the fans accepting me, both writing the faith column and the sports after all these years. I mean, this is my dream job, David. I would look at, I'd go to the old stadium with my dad, and this is when I figured out real early on. My father played minor league baseball for a year, and my brother was a high school coach, and I was sitting on the bench at Benedictine, and I knew this. There was no career there. And I wanted to write already, and I would see Russ Snyder and Hal Lebowitz and Bob Sudyk, these guys kind of walking up there with their typewriter and the old catwalks to the press box, and I would think, boy, it would be nice to do that for a living. And I remember when I was working at Fisher Fazio Food Warehouse during that time and in the summer, and these guys would be sitting around with the plane dealer and they would be talking about what's in the paper. And I think, boy, that would be something if that were my stories. And now we get them on podcasts, we get them all different ways. But to be able to do it for that long, and granted, it wasn't 1863, but I have been in this market since December of 79. And that is just, to me, astounding. And now and then I get emails, people say, oh, you remind me of Hal Lebowitz or Chuck Heaton or somebody like that. And it just makes me feel so good because those were the guys I grew up reading.
Well, well said, Terry. And I know there's an entire generation of journalists who have been inspired by you. And I'm just thankful to be able to work with you every day. So,
by the way, you know, people may think I invented Scribbles in my notebook. Actually,
George Meade.
George Meade.
No, he didn't do it. He didn't.
We did Civil War Scribbles during Gettysburg right afterwards, you know. That Pickett's charge was just a bad move, you know. Lee should have went to the bullpen. That went bad from the beginning. You
Talk
know,
about bad defense.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. Don't do that. Anyway, but where I was going is if you really want to know the idea for Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, check it out. All these chapters with numbers. You know, Proverbs 32:5. It's right there. It's kind of like, and number five from Detroit, the special teams getting their third kick block this year.
I did not. So that's where it came from, huh?
That and Hal Lebowitz did it. And there was a guy out in California. And I figures his name would escape me. He used to call it Notes on a Scorecard. Alan Malamud was his name. He worked for the LA. I think it was called the LA News or Press. It's a long gone paper. But if you just go there, somebody told me early on in this business, if you don't know what to write, rather than write bad, write notes. It's kind of like popcorn. You know, you can go eat a whole bowl of bad popcorn, just kind of hoping the next handful is better.
I love that. All right. Well, speaking of interacting with the readers, Terry, we got a couple of good Hey Terry questions I wanted to get to before we run out of time here. So this first one is from Russ Gantos, and he says, Hey Terry, I'm still a Browns fan even after 30 years in Texas. I know Kevin Stefanski loves his two tight end system, but if you're talking about having your best players on the field as much as possible, how can he possibly defend having Harrison Bryant playing more than Kareem Hunt in a game? I'd bet every NFL head coach would agree they'd much rather plan to defend against a Bryant-focused offense than one with both Nick Chubb and Hunt playing together, and that increases when Deshaun Watson returns. Thanks for the question, Russ. So I did look it up, Terry, just from this past game against the Bills. Harrison Bryant played 56 snaps, and Kareem Hunt played 31. So this certainly isn't a Harrison Bryant-focused offense, but what do you think about Russ's point about snap counts for those two guys?
And how about Farrell Brown?
I think Farrell Brown was around 8 or 11. I don't have it in
front
of me.
But what I'm saying, you see guys like that getting time. Because I actually think, I know he dropped the pass. I actually think Harrison Bryant can help them. And Njoku, that's one where I disagree with Andrew Berry on the contract. And, you know, Njoku's come a long way. I have to give him credit on that. But why can't you split out Kareem Hunt more in the slot? Now, David, seriously, you speak to that. Why do you think Stefanski has shied away from that?
Well, so what's the mantra we've heard from fans all season, right? Run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, give it to Chubb, give it to Chubb. And you have to have blocking to do that. And Harrison Bryant is not the best blocking tight end that the Browns have ever had. I think he's improved quite a bit since they drafted him. He's gotten bigger. But if you want to run, then that's how Stefanski runs, is by having tight ends on the field to block. Could they come out with one fewer tight end, have Hunt split out wide, and run out of that formation? I think so, right?
Yeah. Yeah, or even
it's
throw
worth a
it
try.
Out and throw it short. See, one of the things that I keep harping on is it's not simply the number of carries. It's the number of touches that you give your running backs. So the screen passes or just the little flare out passes to them. Why not? I mean, you keep saying they have to tackle eligible and all that other stuff going on in there. But in the end, really, the offense has been ranked in the top 10 all year in scoring points.
And what's to lose, I guess, is the question.
So. Well, why not? You know, it's kind of like that falls under the foul, the fire the coordinator, change it. You're 3-7. You've lost 6 of 7. They're not sitting there saying, you know what, this is a perfect Picasso, and I'm afraid I'm going to mess this masterpiece up by just erasing some of the lines. For heaven's sake.
Give it a whirl. Why not?
Give it a whirl. You know, let's go a little Rembrandt instead of Picasso. You know, I don't know.
All right. This is our second question. It's from Peter Miller. He's from Vienna, Ohio. He says, hey, Terry, the Roberto Clemente Award has been in the news recently. MLB has resisted having all teams retire Roberto Clemente's number and placing his impact on par with that of Jackie Robinson, who also has the Rookie of the Year Award named in his honor. Why not think outside the box and retire Clemente's number in the NL and Larry Doby's number in the American League? What do you think of that?
A, I've never thought of that question, and B, I love it. I've written a couple columns over the years. It started when I wrote the book Our Tribe, and I really looked into Larry Doby. Larry Doby was ill-prepared by Bill Veeck and the Indians at the time. He came in the middle of the 47th season. It wasn't like Jackie Robinson, the great experiment in 1946, when he came in and he played a year in AAA. Jackie Robinson did for Montreal with the Dodgers. He went to spring training at 47 with the Dodgers. By then, these guys knew whether they like it or not, he could play. Though, Doby is dropped in like he parachutes in the middle of the 47th season. I'm serious because I got this documented. He walks into the clubhouse. Lou Boudreau was just told the day before he was the player manager, by Bill Veeck, the owner, oh, we're bringing in Larry Doby from the Negro Leagues. And he says to Veeck, well, what does he play? Oh, he plays second base. And Veeck and Boudreau goes, we have an all-star at second base. We have Joe Gordon. So Doby comes in the next day, and he says, the exact quote, well, son, what position do you really like to play? He goes, well, I played second base. And he says, son, we can't play you there because we have Joe Gordon. He says, can you try first? I've never played there. And if you look at his 47th season, it's a disaster. Then the next year, this is fascinating too, they bring in Tris Speaker, who, by the way, was rumored to be kind of have racist attitudes. But I think that was probably more a product of the time and kind of revisionist history than that, because Hal Lebowitz knew him, and Hal told me this story. So Speaker comes in, and the assigned Speaker was a great center fielder in the 1920 Indians and then to teach Doby to play the outfield. They become big buddies. You know, this is mentor and this. Speaker saves Doby's career in run regard, just got him going. Of course, Doby ends up having several all-star seasons in that. So where am I going with that? Absolutely, his number deserves to be retired. He had a tougher road than Jackie Robinson.
Well, maybe this is something that can get some traction. And of course, you know, Roberto Clemente, with all the humanitarian work he did,
that's
the impact
a
he had him, and the player he was, that's a no-brainer too. But
you know what I like about that too? A Latino was honored.
And talk about someone who influenced generations of players that came after him as well. Yep.
How about that, by the way? You know, he was drafted by, I believe, Branch Rickey, the same guy that I hope I'm right on this, because if not, I'm sure he'll write it. Branch, I believe, was running the Pirates at the time, and he took Clemente in one of those Rule 5 drafts.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I have to look that up to hope I'm right, because sometimes when I think I'm so right, I find out how wrong I am. But he definitely was taken in one of those minor league drafts.
All right. Hey, thanks for those two questions, you guys. If you want to send a question in for next week's podcast, you can do it a couple of ways. One is just to send an email to sports@cleveland.com and put Hey Terry or Terry's Talking in the subject line, and we'll try and get it on next week. Or you can go to Terry's Facebook page, where he has a lot of stuff, and send it there, and we'll get it on next week's podcast. So thanks for those. I think that's going to do it, Terry. I wanted to give a plug real quick. We mentioned Chris Fedor and Paul Hoynes and Joe Noga. All of our beat reporters have texting accounts, and I know there's a lot of crazy stuff going on with social media. If you sign up for our text, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, you're going to get some great inside information from the reporters as they're covering the team, stuff they're thinking about when they're sitting around their house. It's a great way to have a conversation with the beat writers and just kind of avoid all the garbage you see on social media these days. And the other thing, and we're thankful for all the support that readers give us, but it's a great way to support the journalism we do. And it's only $3.99 a month for for Ohio State and for the Cavs. So check it out. Just go to the team pages and look at the top. You'll see a blue banner. We would really be thankful for any support you can give us. And thanks for listening to the podcast. I guess we're good, right, Terry? Anything else you want to say?
No, I finally have. I actually was correct in Roberto Clemente.
Oh, you
signed by
good.
The Dodgers. He was 19 years old. He bats 257 in Montreal. And Branch Rickey, who had, of course, been with the Dodgers and in other places, he is now running the beleaguered Pirates. He hears about this kid. Remember, they didn't have all the scouting and all the stuff. Clemente. And he talks to his friends with the Dodgers. They're begging him not to take him. And what does he do? He drafts him at the age of 19. So Branch Rickey, who broke the color line with Jackie Robinson, then goes and takes Clemente from his old team and sets him up in Pittsburgh.
That is some story. You were right. You won't be getting any mail from.
It's like I remember stuff from the Civil War and from there. I can't remember like anything from the last 25 years.
I'm the same way. All right. Well, Terry, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the day with everything you have going on. And thanks to everybody for listening to the podcast. We really enjoy doing this, and we love hearing from you. And we hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving, too. We'll catch you next week on Terry's Talkin'.